Hi, and welcome to my podcast. My name is Layli, and I'm happy to be talking with you today about male sexual functioning. Neural pathways, hormones, and brain areas are involved in a host of events in our bodies. They comprise of the integral hardware of our being with profound control over our physical and mental processes. Today, I'm going to hone in on a specific mechanism, that is heavily stigmatized and rarely brought up in conversation, even though it is arguably one of the most important coordinated responses of not only our species, but most other species in the animal kingdom. It's a process that has contributed heavily to the success of evolution on Earth. So I'm going to be talking about ejaculation, and more specifically, human male ejaculation. So let's start by distinguishing the definitions of ejaculation and orgasm, because they are certainly not the same thing, even though they often occur together in male humans. An orgasm can be defined as a transient peak of intense pleasure from built-up sexual tension, and it's commonly associated with a faster heart rate and pleasurable pelvic muscular contractions in male humans. On the other hand, though, ejaculation is a coordinated act of contractions of the smooth muscle in the penis that allows for the ejection of semen. The coordinated response is heavily dependent on our autonomic nervous system. So now that we know the very basics of what's going on with male sexual functioning, we can dive in and explore its neurobiological effects. Our brain is absolutely packed with dopamine receptors, with dopamine being one of the most important neurotransmitters. In terms of sex behavior, though, dopamine has facilitative effects on sexual motivation, copulatory proficiency, and genital reflexes. The medial preoptic area is an area of the hypothalamus that has a high concentration of dopamine receptors responsible for sexual motivation, among other effects on ejaculation. Sexual motivation is really integral for reproductive success. It can be defined as an innate drive that motivates to engage in sexual behavior, which ultimately leads to intercourse. Such motivation is usually what starts the three-step process of sexual arousal, ejaculation, and orgasm. A study conducted in Holland by Hostage et al. Found that electrical stimulation of the medial preoptic area elicited ejaculation, whereas lesions in the medial preoptic area inhibited ejaculation. Although the reasoning behind this is still unknown and in the dark, the results do indicate that the medial preoptic area is important in human male sexual functioning. Along with dopamine, there are several other chemical messengers that are involved in human male sexual functioning. Among these are oxytocin, vasopressin, and prolactin. Oxytocin, commonly known as the love hormone, increases during male and female orgasms, intensifying that sense of pleasure. Existing literature teaches us that oxytocin and vasopressin as hormones are released by the posterior lobe of the pituitary gland, and more specifically, oxytocin receptors are present in neural pathways related to reproductive behaviors in the peripheral and central nervous system. However, vasopressin is primarily related to anxiety, aggression, and fear. A study in 1987 by Murphy et al. Investigated the blood plasma concentration of oxytocin and vasopressin secreted from the posterior lobe of the pituitary gland. They found that oxytocin levels peaked suddenly at ejaculation, whereas vasopressin levels peaked at arousal and dropped rapidly back to baseline at ejaculation. A more recent study from 2002 by Kruger et al. Looked at blood plasma concentrations of oxytocin, vasopressin, and prolactin through a chemiluminescence immunoassay system. Contrary to Murphy, Kruger's study found no statistical significance between vasopressin and sexual arousal. However, they did find significance between oxytocin blood plasma concentration and ejaculation as well as post-ejaculation. The results on prolactin had the highest statistically significant effect, where prolactin concentration gradually increased at arousal and peaked at ejaculation, then continued to plateau post-orgasm. Kruger identified a negative feedback loop involving prolactin, where this hormone can modify dopaminergic neurons in the central nervous system that control different aspects of sexual behavior. It inhibits these neurons and the release of dopamine, which in turn decreases social arousal, signaling that sexual satisfaction has been reached. The increase in prolactin post-ejaculation can be used to explain the common post-ejaculation fatigue, as naturally increased levels of prolactin have also been found during sleep. So these two studies are especially important as they give us a baseline understanding of the hormones at play during human male sexual functioning. Now, I'm happy to introduce to you my good friend Kea Prabhu, who is a second-year student at University College of London studying psychology.
Thank you so much for being here. So, what did you think of the two studies, and were you surprised at all about the findings?
Yeah, I was actually quite surprised, especially about the involvement of vasopressin in sexual arousal in Murphy's study, just because it's more commonly associated, what's more commonly thought of as a neurotransmitter, which is associated with aggression.
Yeah, as was I. I would have thought that emotions like fear and aggression would actually inhibit a pleasurable experience like male orgasm and ejaculation. However, this feature of vasopressin may not be at play in this case at all, because I saw that vasopressin plays a role in the fight or flight response in aggression, so it could exist in conjunction with adrenaline, because Kruger also found a spike in adrenaline during ejaculation, so there could be some underlying neural pathways involved.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there must be some underlying neural connections and parallels that sort of ended up in these results, especially because blood plasma vasopressin concentration was of no statistical significance in Kruger's more modern take of the topic. So the increase in vasopressin may also be subject to the individual. There are so many men who take more pleasure out of aggressive sex, which could be an alternate explanation for the presence of vasopressin. But I'd also suggest maybe taking Murphy's result with a grain of salt, as it is a really old study, so the resources were very limited, and the techniques in comparison to the resources in research that we have today, I mean, you can't even compare them. They're so much more advanced today. I mean, then again, there has probably been a significant revision of ethical guidelines as well within psychological research since the 1980s, which would mean that it would be a bit difficult to replicate this study. But nevertheless, I mean, it does still have some importance. You shouldn't just completely overlook a study because it's outdated.
Yeah, for sure. And I definitely agree that Kruger's study is a significantly more recent representation and replication to some degree of Murphy's study, although it is difficult to understand to what degree the results of such a sensitive study could provide accurate results.
Oh, yeah, of course. So sexual arousal and ejaculation usually occurs in a significantly more private setting, and usually during time of intimacy with a partner. And even if it isn't with a partner, it's still in a very private setting. And obviously neither of these studies represent such an environment. And that could actually be a confounding variable that results in data that's not actually wholly accurate of the question under study.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for your input. That definitely does shed light on the quality of the existing literature.
No problem. I mean, during my time on the course, I have read about case studies with paraplegics who have difficulty engaging in sex, and we never went into more detail. In fact, I don't recall really reading into the neural basis of human sexual behavior on my course, but I was wondering whether you touched upon this in your course or in the literature that you've looked at.
Yeah, that's a really great point. So on a more neural basis, I think the spine does play a huge part in coordination of ejaculation. I think the spine is like the mediator, so the pathway for the neurotransmitters between the brain and the genitals. And I actually read in one of the studies, I believe it was Kruger's study, that the lumbosacral cord of the spine is involved with semen filling the urethra and then expulsion of semen during ejaculation. So it would make some sense as to why males with damaged spinal cords are unable to ejaculate and therefore possibly unable to orgasm. But I'm curious, though, I'm not exactly sure about this point, but as to how you think paraplegia would maybe affect sexual arousal as opposed to ejaculation?
Well, I believe that arousal and erection could be stimulated in other ways other than genital stimulation in particular. So the individual could still reach a stage of arousal, although the intensity would probably vary in those with spinal cord injuries. Arousal could also be reached through fantasy techniques that would involve brain areas rather than the spinal cord. So that's also an alternate explanation.
Yeah, that's really accurate. But yeah, thank you so much for engaging in this discussion and taking part in my podcast. I really appreciate it.
No problem at all. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you.
So now I'm going to leave you with some questions to reflect on after listening to this discussion and to the background research and literature that I provided you with. How can these findings and background knowledge help us understand more about erectile dysfunction and ejaculatory problems? And what kind of future studies and theories should we be developing to investigate this? Thank you for listening to my podcast.